You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. BuiltForTheStage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation.
We've been talking now, did some sound checks and all that kind of stuff. You're being kind of reserved, but all the footage I've seen, you're a pretty, like, organically funny person, so no pressure.
He's found me out.
But all of the stuff I've seen, you're not the way you've been with... You're being polite, I appreciate that. But where did you get that from, that kind of, like, quirkiness of yours?
Oh,
where do you think you got that from?
I don't know. I can't really pinpoint it, but I guess I've always been... As a lot of performers, like fitness people are, I think we're hyper children.
Yeah.
So I was a very like hyper child and was always, so that's why I got into dance and everything. But I always watched a lot of I Love Lucy when I was growing up.
There you go.
I think that's maybe where some of it comes from. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a silly person.
I ask where it comes from because my dad is like a librarian, silent type, and my mom is this really loud Italian. And I can kind of be a weird mix of both, where I'm outgoing, but also like a hermit.
Yes.
So I didn't know if maybe someone rubbed off on you along the way.
I don't know. My grandmother was a theatrical lady.
There you go. Maybe it's just in your blood and you don't realize it. Okay. So aside from performing, I saw at times that you also have danced or taught dance to kids in the past, or maybe still currently.
Mm-hmm.
How is that with like a room full of children?
It always depends on the age, you know, the age and the level and all of that. So my class always adjusts based on that. But I mean, it's my favorite thing to do because it just reminds me of why I'm doing this. And I think I'm like a huge advocate for arts education for kids. I think that's what like was able to get me through growing up. So I always want to keep giving back and doing that. So yeah, it's just something I really enjoy. It's something I hope to keep building upon and do more and more of it as I get older. So
you have a lot to teach them. Is there anything, like when you have these classes, they're young, but is there anything that they teach you along the way that you're like...
Yes. Yeah. Totally. I mean, a lot about enthusiasm and they loved that.
Laugh track.
They loved
speaking that. Speaking of,
yeah,
I Love Lucy.
I brought a laugh track with me. Yeah. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah.
I mean, they teach me also about the finding the playfulness and the freedom and abandonment that a lot of times we forget about because this becomes our job and it becomes like, ugh, all right, 8 times a week, and, you know. So I always love teaching because it kind of snaps me back into, okay, this is what I always wanted to do and this is a privilege. And, you know, so
like, man, they love this. Like, oh, wait, I love this. Like,
yeah, me too.
Remember that.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, cool. You've been dancing your whole life, or how long have you been dancing?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess I started dancing when I was, you know, 4 or 5, just like a lot of kids do. But then I got, I guess, serious in it when I was maybe about 11 or 12, and I went into ballet very intensely. And I was like in the bunhead track. I was like, I'm going to be a ballerina. And so I did that for many years. I spent my summer up at like School of American Ballet and studied in Dallas. And
You're from Texas.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So many Texans in my life that just
Texans are great.
Texas forever.
Gotta say.
Yeah, Texas forever. Okay, cool. So doing that basically your whole life, some of the listeners, it's probably hard to kind of fathom like doing one thing or one trait, you know, your entire life. Or just fitness too, like, wow, you've been working out for over 10 years or your whole life. How did you do it and how do you still do it now? How do you still day in and day out?
I mean, I'm sure, as you know, being a fitness professional, there's always something new to find. Like, you've never reached mastery, you know, like, no matter how, you know, what Broadway show you get or what role you play, like, you've never reached it, and your whole life is going to be, you're going to be a student. I try to always live by that, like, I'm always a student. Even when I'm in rehearsal, I'm watching other people and trying to pick up on, you know, behaviors or techniques that other people are using. And, but yeah, I feel like it also morphed over time. You know, at first it was ballet, and then through an injury, actually, I started going into other forms of dance. And then through that, I realized how important fitness and cross training was, because I was getting more, you know, like, little injuries and stuff. And then once I started working out more, all of those disappeared. So yeah, I also just love it. Like, I love moving, and it, as you know, it makes you feel good. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So. How about when it's not new? How about when you're, I don't want to say forced, but maybe you're doing a show, or you're in the midst of a class where it's like, you know, okay, business as usual.
Yeah.
What gets you to show up, and then what gets you to actually show up when you do show up?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think there's always going to be something, whether it's positive or negative, to draw from every single experience. Even if it's like the worst thing ever, it can be like, great, I now, through this experience, have learned that I do not like A, B, and C. You know, like, there's always something. So when I feel totally unmotivated, even if it's harping on a negative thing, that I can say, okay, when I get out of this situation, I'll draw this from this. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I'm just always trying to look for the things to carry forward. 'Cause nothing, you know, unless you're in, like, a show that's running for 15 years or something, you know, our world is constantly changing, and that's, like, a blessing and a curse of what we do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. I saw you used to instruct Zumba, or maybe aerobics.
Yes.
As well. I took a Zumba class back in the day.
Oh, my God.
Man, I was the only guy in the class, and I owned it. I mean, I was just getting after it.
It's the best.
Tell me some stories, or one.
Love that you're in Zumba.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. No, it kind of started, it was in college, and I wanted to do it, one, because I wanted to make a little extra money while I was in school, you know, and then two, I went to a conservatory, and so it was just very, very concentrated, and I was like, I need something outside of this. I need, like, a community outside of this. I need something to put my energy toward that isn't all in this world, because
yeah.
It was just kind of getting soul-sucking a little bit.
Yeah.
So I went to the rec center, and I was like, do you guys need any instructors? And they were like, they basically said, yeah, you just have to get these certifications. So I got my, like, ACE certification and group fitness, and then my Zumba certification, and I got a certification in Turbo Kick. It's like a kickboxing dance thing.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, through that, I was able to get a job at the University of Cincinnati Rec Center.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it, like, that was when I realized how much the mental aspect of what we do is important. It, like, saved me mentally, I think. Because,
yeah.
One, just interacting with, like, non-musical theater people. And there were these people that took my class, because I taught for 3 years. People that took my class that, like, I saw them transform over a year, and they would come to my class every week, and they were like, it just made me, like, so emotional. Like, I feel, like, emotional talking about it now. It was amazing. So, yeah.
It's nice to,
it's my Zumba,
to aid in someone's improvements.
And
sure.
Especially people of, like, all different walks of life. Like, there was, like, a 60-year-old woman that would, like, come take my, who you would never think she would be, like, killing it at Zumba, but there she was, you know?
Yeah.
So,
how do you do that now, in regards to your sanity? Who are you off the stage now? Now that you're in New York, you're on Broadway, who are you off of?
It's constantly changing, and I've sort of, this past year, went through a big, like, a lot of life shifts, and so most recently, I've been meditating a lot more, and that, like, doing a lot more mental work as opposed to, I was a lot more physical before and now I'm trying to zone in on that. And that's helped a lot. I'm almost done with this book called Buddha Walks Into a Bar. It's like about how to integrate Eastern philosophies and mentalities and like a lot of that into our culture,
yeah,
like our everyday life, because sometimes it seems really hard to incorporate a lot of that into this busy life, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I've been focusing on lately.
Cool.
As of late.
Going back a little earlier in your career, you were in the ensemble in Oklahoma at the,
yeah,
Lyric Opera in,
yeah,
Chicago. But later, you played Lori in Oklahoma, the same show, but at a very well-known regional house, the,
mm-hmm,
Muni. Besides, like, experience as far as, like, time passing, how did you do that? How did you jump from being in the ensemble to booking the lead in the same musical on the, probably one of the most well-known regional,
yeah,
houses in the country?
Oh, my God.
How did you do that?
I mean, that job, that Muni job, like, to this day, is still one of my favorite experiences ever, because I got to dance the Dream Ballet and sing the role, and do the role, which, as a dancer, as a, you know, dancer, singer, actor, there's not a ton of opportunity for us to really do all three. So, like, that show, or, like, Cats, or, you know, it's so fulfilling to do. But it was great to kind of re... because I had done the show, I guess, twice. I did it in college, too, and then in the ensemble, dance captain, and then did it at Lyric, and then revisited it again as Lori. And so I felt like I knew the show really well, and I had seen so many people portray the role, so I was able to kind of come in with all that previous knowledge, and yeah, that was an amazing, I mean, like, freaking Beth Lovell was my aunt. I was like, all right, I'm done here. Like,
yeah, how was that? Any memories of working with her?
She's just amazing. I mean, and now working with Kelly, who I had a history with too, like, you know, just, they're so, like, kind and giving and generous,
mm,
and that to me is like the sign of a true star, you know? It's like, I just think, like, when people think it's like, oh, you're a diva, and you're like, here I am, it's just, that is just bullshit. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
It's the real divas are the people who are giving and, I mean, and try to help other people get up to where they are, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just read a book, it's called The Go Giver instead of The Go Getter.
Oh, yeah.
And it's basically all about that.
Yeah.
All about, you don't climb to the top by getting. But
yes.
By giving.
Yeah. Or what is, man, I'm forgetting the quote, right? We rise by lifting others.
Yes.
So it's like that, you know, that always sticks with me. Yeah.
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 You also got to work with Susan Stroman.
Yes.
She choreographed, right? And maybe another time or two you had worked with her?
Yeah. Originally I got to know her, or I think get in her circle a little bit by doing that Oklahoma at the Muni, because that was her choreography.
Yeah.
So one of her associates said it.
Mm.
And then I went in for, they were doing a concert production of Crazy for You, and this was while I was in Cats, and I got cast in that. And then I get a phone call like 2 weeks after that closed, and she was like, hey, do you want to do Girl in the Yellow Dress for a Lincoln Center gala with Andre Bishop? And I was like, I'm sorry, what? With like Santino Fontana. I was like, wait, what's happening? And yeah, so since then, she was always someone that I wanted to, like, idolized, you know? So,
why?
Yeah. Why? Because she's just such a pioneer as a woman choreographer. You know, she was the first, I think so, she was the first woman to win a Tony for Best Director for Contact. Fact check, might not be right about that, but she's just like, and I also, her choreography, it always comes from such a, especially in Oklahoma, because that was my first introduction to her work, and it just feels so natural and like organic to do, and and I also just think she's also nice, kind, stand-up person, you know? She's not gonna put anybody down in the room, she's gonna like, her standards here, and she's like tough, but she also is just a class act, and that to me, you know, says a lot.
Okay.
yeah
before you booked Cats, can you tell us about one of your toughest times in the pursuit of, you know, this career of the dream.
The journey of the dream.
Because everyone on this podcast more or less has, made it to the top. It's never owned here in performing, but you are here. But for the people out there that are listening, they're still chasing.
Yeah.
Tell us about when you were chasing and some times you might have had to conquer.
I mean, there's a few. I mean, one thing that I always, my times of growth were always in the darker times. Like, my biggest times of growth were in times when I wasn't at the top of my game or succeeding. So that always is a good thing to remember for me. Like, when I'm going through a rough time, I'm like, no, this is, like, good. I'm growing. This is, doesn't mean I'm failing necessarily. But I got pretty lucky. I mean, when I moved to New York, so I worked at Lyric, but I moved to New York and I was non-equity. I was like, never really did any summer stock because I never booked summer stock. And that was a whole, I was like,
what do you mean you never booked it?
I just never, I auditioned. Nobody ever wanted me.
There you go. Go ahead and zoom in on that a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Cause that's like, forget about your tough times as a professional. You're training to be a professional, and you're not failing, but you're not swinging and hitting, and you're probably thinking to myself, "What am I doing?" Like,
yeah, oh, totally. And I think a lot of it, in hindsight, looking back, I'm like, oh, because I just hadn't grown into myself yet, and I was always going into auditions like channeling people, I was like, I'm gonna be, Sutton Foster. And looking back, I'm like, well, that's why I didn't get it. Because I was like not going in as Christine.
You were Christine playing someone else, playing a role.
Yes. And like, nobody wants that. So, I had I'd never booked summer, like all my friends were booking these summer stocks, and I was like, oh my God, as I'm working at Kings Island over the summer or like interning back in Dallas and like literally scrubbing the floor, like I was like, what am I doing wrong? And then my senior year, I again didn't get any summer stocks, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to India. And I like found this like program that through Theater Me Too, this theater company that's actually in Brooklyn now. They're based out of Brooklyn, but they do this like artist residency sort of thing, and it's 3-4 weeks long, and you apply and you can go study with this theater company that's learning the native art forms of whatever area they're in. So that year they were in like South India. And so anyway, going back to like, I never booked summer stock, and then I finally was like, I sort of went through a phase where I was like, I hate musicals, like, I hate this, I'm going to India, I'm going to like bathe in the Ganges. And I was like, but that was such a turning point for me because it like, I just zoomed out. I was able, I was with a group, but we were on our own, we all kind of did our own thing, and you were sort of, you slept in like a, what are those things called? Like a mosquito net.
Oh.
And you're like, going to the bathroom and like a hole in the ground. Like it was like,
oh wow,
it was like full on. The place that we stayed, it was just like different, it was just a different world.
Yeah.
But that was actually helped me in my art form more than like any amount of training would have ever done, just because like I was able to see a different part of the world and kind of a different, you see these women that have studied in Mohiniyattam, which is like the native classical Indian dance, and they've been doing it since they were 3 and they study for their entire life, or like a guru that wakes up at like 4 a.m. and yoga has like nothing to do with anything physical, and it's all, you're just like, my brain is just like exploding. And I think after that, I felt like that's when I started to come into myself, and I was way less worried about all the stuff in musical theater and more just like, okay, what am I doing and why do I want to do this and why is what I'm doing important? And then I was able to kind of root myself in like what I'm doing besides trying to channel people all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, fail and then go to India and then
okay, cool. Okay, so I talk about on this show a lot fruition moments. So you're in Cats, you're making your debut in the first show. Okay, yeah. First show. Do you have a moment where you like on the stage at some point during that time or before or after when you're thinking of India or thinking of like times when you're like, okay, this is how I got here, all of that was worth it and lined up to bring this to fruition?
Yes. I mean, that's like another like mini story. Like right when I graduated school, I got immediately to the final callback of like a replacement in Cinderella. And then I ended up not getting it because I was the wrong dress size.
No.
And I was like, ah! You know, like spiral into like, oh my God, I'm fat. Oh, and so then that didn't happen. And then I ended up months later getting the Joseph tour, which is how I got to know Andy, who set the Cats revival, you know. So then 3 years later, since graduating, because it was, yeah, I was so grateful that it wasn't Cinderella, even though at the time I was so bummed about it.
Yeah.
I was like, that was supposed to be it, and I didn't get it. And there were other Broadway shows I went in for that I didn't get. But that was beyond what I thought I could have had in a debut. I was like playing a dream role in an original cast, you know. And so I was just really grateful for all the quote unquote failures, you know, because they helped me open all the doors and meet the right people to have that, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the lesson to learn is that you failed and kept moving.
Yeah.
A lot of people will fail and be derailed.
No.
And then that opportunity will never come to pass.
Well, because while you're mourning one failure, you're missing something else.
Right.
So it's like, you got to just go, okay, wasn't meant to be. And like, yes, you can have, you're a human. You can have a moment of like, oh, dang it. But like, yeah.
Keeping that at the forefront, though, in your mind.
Yeah.
For sure. So you got to perform in the Tonys, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
Tell us something that entails with performing on the Tonys that someone watching it wouldn't know about. Like, I know that you have like a really short rehearsal process to kind of get that set or something like that. Anything that like, oh wow, if only people knew.
Yes, I think it's hilarious. Like the you know, image of what you think it is. Or when I was growing up, I was like, oh yes, you sit in your dressing room and you have like lights everywhere and you like have your powder puff and you're like, you know, and then you walk upstage and then you, no. You get ready at your theaters and then you're on a bus and they bus you to Radio City. And then we were sitting on the bus for like 20 minutes while the Tonys are going on, like on our cell phones, like, oh, did Kathy Zuber win for costumes or whatever?
Oh, no way.
And then it's like, okay, 5 minutes till your thing. You get off the bus, you go through the hallway, you're like high-fiving Carousel, like the number before, you get backstage, and then it's like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. You do the number, and then they're like, okay, great. And then you go back on the bus, and then you go back to the theater. So like, the Tonys, you're like, oh, I didn't really attend the Tonys. I like bust in, did the number, and like left.
Yeah.
So it's a very surreal experience, because then you watch it over back on the TV, and you're like, did that happen? Like, what? So yeah, it's a very crazy experience, but I mean, it's stunning. You know, you're at Radio City and it's like super epic and so
it's like shooting a movie but you're only in one scene,
right?
And you know what the movie's about but you don't see any of it, and you just go in for your scene and then you have to wait until the movie comes out to see what it was all about. Okay, that's cool. In Cats, there's a news release that just went out that we both go ahead today, right? The date was today.
Yes.
I'm doing my like due diligence to research and like get prepared for this, and it just pops up. and a particular person is playing the same role that you played in Cats.
No big deal.
Who is that particular person?
Just like a T-Swift moment.
Right.
Taylor Swift. I know. I was like, oh. Yeah, my friend sent it to me this morning. This, like, it's in, like, Teen Vogue.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, never thought I'd make my debut in Teen Vogue as a non-human cat. But it's, yeah, it's just, like, this picture of Taylor Swift next to a picture of me. Probably, I'm pretty sure that picture was taken after a show, and I'm, like, sweaty and exhausted, and I was like, can I go change yet? Like,
yeah.
But yeah, pretty cool. I'm excited to see.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you excited that Taylor Swift will be reprising your role?
I mean, what a crazy cast of, like, awesome celebrities. I mean, I think it's definitely going to be, from what I've heard, it's not going to be exactly how the musical is. Like, they're doing a lot of, I don't know, like, part of it's animated and part of it's, I don't know. So it'll be interesting. I was surprised at first, but I'm sure she's going to bring her own flavor. It's going to be awesome. So
okay.
I'm so excited to see it.
Okay. You recently left My Fair Lady at the Lincoln Center. And you have begun rehearsals for Kiss Me Kate.
Yeah.
Before we move on to Kiss Me Kate, your current production, I was talking to Barbara Jo in another episode about how the Lincoln Center is magical and how I just love the Lincoln Center. Do you have any memories just fresh in your mind from My Fair Lady? Anything that you were like just beaming about that?
Oh man, I mean
that experience.
It is very special, especially for me, because I grew up with my summers at Lincoln Center. I went to School of American Ballet for 3 summers, and then I did the summer program at Juilliard before I went to college, their dance program. So Lincoln Center in general is a very special place in my heart. So that was a lot of the reason when I got offered the show, I was like, yeah, I just to do a show there is like the dream, you know? So yeah, it's nice that it's out of the fray of, you know, Times Square, you know, it's kind of in its own world up there. And yeah, it was great. There's something about that theater too, because it's a thrust stage. So there's kind of nowhere to hide on that stage. You're being seen from all angles. And,
Was there a moment where there was nowhere to hide and everyone got to see some type of mishap on the stage that you can remember?
Oh, I mean, man, I don't think, surprising, I had a lot of mishaps in Cats, but in this one, nothing crazy, but there were a couple, you know, we had this waltz thing and we had some people go down sometimes, and that, you know, you're just like, well, there's no hiding that.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know.
How about Cats? Anything crazy? You go out in the audience a lot?
I went out, so many things. There was one that I distinctly remember because, so I would enter from the house a lot and like run down the aisle and come up on the stage. And there was one at the beginning of Act Two, and I was like, I'm so cat-like today. On fire. And I was like running down and I was like, I'm gonna just leap up onto the stage. And it's a very quiet moment. It's like silent with like very ambient music before Old Deuteronomy sings.
Mm-hmm.
And I went for the leap and I like my foot like
I see where this
like missed the step and slid and I just like bit it and then like slowly fell down each step one by one, and you could hear the audience literally do the like teeth breathe thing.
Yeah.
People were like, ooh, did you see that? And I was like, oh, fuck. Anyway, and I just like slowly, I was like, slowly went up on stage and like pretended like it didn't happen, but I was like, now my cover's blown. Like, I'm supposed to be this like really sexy, smooth cat, and like it's over for this show. Mm-hmm. So,
and you get a note from your stage manager the next day.
It's like,
pretty sure we didn't set that.
Yeah, maybe don't do that. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. It's just going for it, really trying to.
You were channeling that enthusiasm from the kids that
you
taught in.
Yeah,
in
the
dance
kids'
class.
Fault. It's their fault.
They were bringing that back up in you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. How about, so now that you are rehearsing Kiss Me Kate, like I said, and the previews opens on Valentine's Day, very fitting.
Yes.
I saw they're going to have like a kissing booth or something there, a little promo.
Yeah, they're having a bunch of pop-up booths like all over the city, so.
Currently, to promote it right now?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like a different, you know, Sephora and MAC and like all these.
Nice. Yeah. Way to get innovative.
Marketing, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So how much brilliance right now is being splashed around the room with, you mentioned Kelly O'Hara earlier, you have Scott Ellis directing.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, what amazingness has been going
on
in the room?
I mean, first of all, it's so goofy. Like the vibe in the room is so, everyone is so positive and upbeat, which is just makes a huge difference. I've been in casts where that hasn't been the case and it's a lot harder to work, you know, when the vibe isn't like uplifting and positive. Mm-hmm. So that's been awesome.
Who do you think steers that? How does that, is this just organic? Do you think it's the director? How do you think that happens?
It's partly like who is cast, and then I also think it trickles down. So, you know, both Scott and Warren Carlisle, the choreographer, they get along really well. And so that camaraderie really helps set the tone. And also Roundabout is just, you really feel like they are there to take care of you, and they want to do good theater, and it's just refreshing to be in that room. It's not like, yeah, we're gonna get a lot of money. Like, it just has a good vibe.
Yeah.
So that helps a lot. But the room is so silly. I mean, we're just, it's a fun show. It's funny, and so it's been a lot of fun getting in there. But at first, like the first 2 weeks, it was crazy because Warren Carlisle is not easygoing, you know what I mean? Like, it's intense, and which I love. It's very focused, and his passion is so palpable in the room. It's so inspiring to me. Like, I just love being in a room with him. It's like a dream, totally. But he's very, you know, you are going full out all day. You're doing it over and over, and everyone's just at the top of their game, which is inspiring but also exhausting, so you have to like pace yourself. So that was the first 2 weeks, was just a lot of choreography and a lot of like retaining that information and drilling.
How is Too Darn Hot going? Is it amazing?
It's so good. it's awesome.
Are there some jaw dropping moments in there that's like gonna make the audience go crazy?
Like, just you wait.
Come on, just give it just a little bit, just something. What can you leak out there?
I mean, let's just say that James T. Lane, he's playing Paul, who's like kind of the lead of Too Darn Hot, the number. Mm-hmm. He, like, every day, I'm like, what'd you do this morning? He's like, went to the studio, ran Too Darn Hot like 3 times, came here. Like, he is drilling and working his ass off, and it shows. He's incredible. The stamina, because it's like a 14-minute number. Yeah. I mean, it's a marathon, especially for him, because he's like singing and tapping. So it's just really awesome to see people, you know, giving so much of themselves and working at the top of their game, and everyone just like excelling, and the energy, it's awesome. And it's so much fun to do. I mean, you're exhausted, but I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I get paid to do this. Like, what?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What's your most enjoyable part of the show right now, besides maybe Too Darn Hot? What are you loving right now?
Oh, Too Darn Hot. I have like a couple little bit funny things, you know, which are a lot of fun to do, because it's just, you know, we're truly like playing on stage, which is refreshing and uplifting. Mm.
What kind of style does Scott Ellis bring to his directing? Is it very much so like that, where it's like, let's just keep throwing things up against the wall, see what's sticking, and whatever's not, we'll just move on?
Totally. It's definitely that, and he's very, you know, he's done all of his research, and it's, you know, structured enough, but not to where it's like stifling, creatively stifling. So everyone, you know, it feels like everyone can kind of bring their own into it and find, you know, what their best angle is and find how they want to do it, you know, which is great. And it's just fun. We're just having so much fun.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Okay, so the next question, it's not to be a downer, it's just to have you, you know, bring light to a lesson for mm-hmm. the listeners out there. The show is unfortunately on a limited engagement. It's mm-hmm. going to run until June 2nd.
Yeah.
So
with a possible extension.
Okay, possible. Cool. We can then get even more in depth with this yeah. metaphoric question. So knowing that you have to live in the moment, mm-hmm. that you have to be present day in and day out, how do you also look towards the future?
Yeah.
Because you have, like, in any show, really, just like you were in My Fair Lady, in the midst of it, hey, I'm going now to yeah. Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah.
How do you live in the present with this rehearsal process, with the opening and so on and so forth, but also at the same
knowing
time...
Knowing my impending doom.
There it is, the downer part of the question.
My impending doom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a reality of what we do. And I think a lot of it, going back to the whole mental game, it's how you look at it. You know, you can look at it with this like, oh no, I won't have employment. Or you can say, okay, I have an opportunity to find something new and something energizing, you know. And I think it helps to know in advance, you know, that is easier than finding out a show's closing 4 weeks before it closes. And
yeah.
then you're, you know, it's like, okay, great, it's a limited run. Then I'm already looking at summer jobs and I'm already looking at stuff for next season. Okay, what can I go in for? Like, which to me is, I love that about this job. A lot of people don't or find a lot of frustration in that. And there's definitely times where it's frustrating. But again, it's just... Also trusting that the relationships you're making are going to carry you forward. I think, you know, okay, yeah, this is a limited run, but I'm also making great relationships with all the people in this room, and they'll also have to find other jobs, and they'll need people, you know. So that's one thing about this community is I feel taken care of to a certain extent, you know, that... Okay, I'm making quality relationships, and those will sustain you more than any job will. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Another book drop. Never yeah. eat alone.
Okay.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's, okay.
It's just about, you know, never traveling alone, never doing yeah. anything alone, never thinking that you're gonna quote unquote make it or rise yeah. to the top or feel yeah. complete.
Well, and just, like, it's like even if you do make it, there. That is, everything's finite. Like, everything has a time, you know, mm-hmm. ending, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could get that Broadway show and be in the... But then you could also be back to where you were 10 years ago in
yeah.
2 months,
yeah.
you know.
If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with others.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've heard that one. I love that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have any daily rituals or, like, habits that, like, keep you on track each day or
yeah.
throughout just your process? Whether life, career, all that.
Right. I mean, it adjusts based on the show that I'm doing. Like, with Cats, it was, like, everything was revolved around the show that night, like, physically and all that stuff. But with My Fair Lady, I wasn't doing as much physical exertion, so I did a lot more during the day. Like, I... went to class every day and tried to keep that up, so it adjusts. Right now, in like rehearsal mode, because we're rehearsing 10 to 6 pretty much every day, so I wake up and I do my like 5-minute meditation and drink coffee, and I always try to, like, it's gonna sound weird, but like do some sort of inversion, like downward dog handstand moment. It like always helps me in the morning. Don't ask me why.
Anxiety with
yeah,
setting yourself
just like one, like I think stretching and getting my body like aligned, maybe, I don't know, it's sort of like I'll do like some sun salutation kind of
yeah.
things, yeah, and then I like to leave early to get to rehearsal so that I don't feel rushed. I can, like, you know, sit on the train and not be running around. But yeah, right now it's just kind of, I'm in rehearsal mode, so have my little morning meditation and a little bit of yoga, get to rehearsal early, warm up. I always try to do like at least 15 to 20 minutes, like a ballet bar or something. And yeah.
I think that preparation in the morning is important. I think it's it sets you up for success. It sets the whole tone
yes.
of your day.
Yes.
I think that I find most successful people, you know, they're not jumping out of bed and sprinting out the door 5 minutes later. All right, so we touched a lot about on the stage. We said a little bit, you're from Texas. Mm-hmm. You once taught Zumba at your... Anything else for our listeners that have been kind of sitting at the table with us here at this random venue?
In, yeah, this gorgeous venue.
43rd and 6th that we...
Yeah, wait. Check it out, guys. Check it out.
43rd and 6th. Bryant Park Bank of... This is Bank of America.
Yeah.
Bank of America.
Welcome. Oh, great.
That's what it is, apparently. Bank of America.
Tower 1, yeah.
They're very nice in here. We just came in, sat down.
Yeah.
Didn't buy anything. No one's bothering us.
Check it out.
Nice fake ivory.
Greenery.
So, before we leave, any like, what are you into right now off the stage? A show, a TV show, a hobby? Do you like knit children's sweaters with
love to
giraffes on them? Like what? Give us one little personal thing before we go.
Man, right now. I've gotten into, so I just moved into a new apartment and I have like this little area where I have my plants. So I've been like really into plants lately and just, been listening to a lot of new music and trying to get inspired and really focus on my show. Yeah. I don't know.
I think I'm taking, as a listener, one of the listeners being here, I'm taking from you that you get a lot from helping others grow. So you got plants, you have the story of the 60-year-old in Zumba.
Yes.
You have the little kids that you taught dancing. And I think it's a great life lesson and so true that you help yourself by helping others.
Yes. Ugh. Yeah. 100%. I hope I always remember that.
Yeah.
Let us remember.
Let us remember, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Christine, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast episode for Built for the Stage. Guys, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you later.
All right, that'll do it from Built for the Stage podcast. Thanks again to Christine for being a guest on the podcast. And once again, you can find her on Instagram at Christine Cornish or her website, www.christinecornishsmith.com. If you're a listener who's a performer and you're still kicking around whether you should try out the program or not, now's the time to do it. Do a free trial. Let's become fitness buddies. Go to the website, www.builtforthestage.com, fill out the contact form. Let me know you're interested. Or go to Instagram at Built for the Stage. Shoot me a DM. Thanks again for tuning in. It's me, Roscoe, signing off.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.